Yeah, you can do it with an apple, but he's more interesting. So visualize, feeling eyes, feel that quality, and then we'll say it together for just a minute. Om mada pachana dihom, om mada pachana dihom, om mada pachana dihom. Om mada pachana dihom, 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 om mada pachana dihom. No mada patana di homo mada patana di homo mada patana di homo mada patana di homo mada patana di homo. Keep going. Manjushri is like frozen within us. So this is a de-icing mantra. No mada patana di homo 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 mada patana di homo. No mada patana di homa 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 mada patana di whispered, semi-audible. Mental recitation. Silence. Cool. So I had this image. You know, like Manjushri's like this weed whacker, right? He's cutting through, like he's going to lead the way for you, slashing through, saying, wisdom coming through, right? So he's like this cosmic weed whacker, sorry. Cutting through, leading the way. Wisdom coming through. Clear out. Wisdom coming through. Make room. Yo, dude.
Could you tell me one more time on this Manjushri, this mantra, what exactly is it for?
It's for cutting through. So that sound, Manjushri, is an archetype. Archetype literally means first form, primordial form, of the quality of intelligence and wisdom within you. So what they do, you know, what the wisdom tradition does is it takes these qualities of mind and it shapes them so that we can work with them, relate to them. So again, we don't want to take his image literally, like there's some Manjushri cartoon character. He's used as a teaching tool. And so by visualizing him to whatever extent or reciting a sound, this teaching tradition says, and in my experience bears it out, is that it actually kind of awakens, stimulates this capacity of the mind to be more insightful. Again, that's the cutting through, more wise, more intelligent. Okay?
When should we do this?
I'm sorry?
When should we do this?
Whenever feels right. I do it every day as part of my formal practice. So every single morning, I do a little practice connected with him for about 10 or 15 minutes. So what I might recommend, so that's a good question. So as you leave, if this resonates with you, pardon the pun, maybe 1 or 2 minutes in relation to your practice.
You know? Thinking of
yes, exactly.
The illusionary.
Exactly. So you can visualize him. You don't have to, but it does help. Thinking of him, that's nice. Visualizing him and then just reciting that sound. Of course, it's not a him. This is an energetic quality that we're trying to evoke. Yeah. And you may be surprised. You do this, you may be surprised that, oh, I didn't used to be able to read a book like this and understand it. I didn't used to be able to comprehend stuff like this. Whoa. Maybe there is something to this Manjushri business.
And the visualization out in front.
Front. It's called a front visualization. Yeah, there are several different kinds, front, self, but at this point, front, because it's easier. Okay. I didn't forget, so maybe we should do it before I do forget, these four reminders. So again, I'm trying to give you a couple of thingies now that I'm going to suggest you do on a daily basis. We let this go for a couple days, but I didn't forget. So remember the four thoughts that turn the mind, the four reminders? So we've done the first two, we'll do them again. We're gonna add the third one today, maybe the fourth one this afternoon or tomorrow. And what I recommend, you know, again, Chöki Nyima Rinpoche, I attended a talk of his in Kathmandu. He gave an entire talk on this topic, and he said, first I said, oh my God, this guy's just exaggerating. But he said, if you take these four reminders to heart, 50% of the path is complete. You're halfway there. You're halfway there if you take these to heart. Why? Because now you've made the turn. Now you're no longer looking out, thinking, oh, that person's going to make me happy, that job's going to make me happy, that vacation, that car, that fill in the blank. You realize, no, only I have the power to make myself happy. And so that is a monumental U-turn, a monumental transformation from looking outside to looking within. So this is a big deal. I also do these every day. If you have a hard time meditating, you're having a hard time doing the spiritual thing, you're thinking, not for me. Jog your memory by putting these puppies into your life. Use death as your advisor. This is a way, again, there he is. There he is. Recontextualize, frame. We're introducing Yama into our lives. And so I recommend you do this every day. Doesn't take long. You can, I do it a number of ways, maybe like one day or a week. You know, for the next week, I'm just going to do the first one. And then for the second week, I'm just going to do the second one. You can do this any way you want. But I recommend, how long does it take to do this? Like a minute? 2 minutes? But just like water, droplets add up, fill. There's a reason these are called the general preliminary practices. These are a big deal. So go ahead and close your eyes. I will read I have these from memory. I memorized them decades ago. Sooner or later, you'll memorize them. It's easy. And then we'll go through them, concentrating a little bit more. I'll recite the third one several times, okay? First, contemplate the preciousness of being free and well-favored. This is difficult to gain, easy to lose. Now I must do something meaningful. Remember, the essence of spiritual practice is remembrance. We forget. We forget that we're going to die. We forget. We think we're going to live forever. That's why we did the contemplation. What would you do if you had 1 day, 2 days, a week, a month left to live? That's another version of this. Second, the whole world and its inhabitants are impermanent. In particular, the life of beings is like a bubble. Death comes without warning. This body will be a corpse. At that time, the Dharma will be my only help. I must practice it with exertion. Third, when death comes, I will be helpless. Because I create karma, I must abandon evil deeds and always devote myself to virtuous actions. Thinking this, every day I will examine myself. Third, when death comes, I will be helpless. Because I create karma, I must abandon evil deeds and always devote myself to virtuous actions. Thinking this, every day I will examine myself. Awesome. That's the other thing. You know, he works in tandem with Manjushri, slicing away what's really not needed. You know, again, at the moment of death, imagine you're on your deathbed. You're on your deathbed. At that point, of what value is your bank account, your portfolio, your car, your house, your whatever? Not a lot. Not a lot of value. That's precisely their inherent value now. So this is the way you simplify. Marie Kondo. For your life. Save you a ton of money. Do I really need to buy that? Do I really need that? Maybe not. Okay. Let's finish our little tour through the bardo. About halfway through the bardo, after crossing all that stuff we talked about, the desert, the mountain, the river of blood, you're summoned to the court compound with military personnel in the inner chamber. Again, I'm just giving you the standard fare in 50 different books. To face Yama, the Lord of Death, and his lieutenants with animal heads. Now, is this literally going to happen? No. It's going to be the judgmental quality of your own mind manifesting in whatever. So think dream interpretation here. Think mythological, mythopoetic thinking. Take this stuff seriously, but don't take it literally. Because otherwise, you know, expectation is premeditated disappointment. Well, wait a second, where's Yama? He's supposed to be here. Shit, man.
It's still terrifying, right?
Well, because it's only terrifying because of what? Your unconscious mind being revealed. So what's happening here is the voice, Yama represents the voice of your true conscience. Your innermost knowledge of your secret motives. Ooh. So, what are your secret motives? I mean, what are your secret motives even now? Why do you really do what you need to do? Ooh. A lot of it's pretty self-serving. So that's what's going to come forth here. And they say, again, don't take it literally, but do take it seriously. White and black pebbles representing your good and evil deeds will be counted. I love this imagery. It's fantastic, man. And they say what will happen is, you know, just imagine being in front of the Lord of Death. You're going to panic and lie. You're going to lie through your teeth, even though you don't have teeth. Because you don't want to really be faced with the truth of your karma, with the truth of who you really are, right? So this is what Francesca Fremantle wrote. I have to share a couple things from the actual book that's pretty cool here, 351. this is the greatest imagery, right? Design, this, you know, in the non-theistic wisdom traditions like Buddhism, there's no creator principle, right? There's no God. Using Occam's razor, you don't need a creator principle to describe the phenomenal world. You just don't. So, you know, can't put the fear of God into you because there isn't one according to this tradition. Even though there are many gods, there's not one God. There are many gods, like in Hinduism. But what the tradition does do is put the fear of karma into you. And that's wholesome fear. That's good fear. You know, Milarepa, remember the guy who killed 37 people? In horror of death, because of his fear of death, because he did these contemplations and realized, holy crap, I really am going to die. In horror of death, I took to the mountains, contemplating again and again on the uncertainty and the hour of death. I captured the fortress of the deathless, unending nature of mind. Now all fear is over and done with. So it was his fear, wholesome fear, that brought him into retreat, that brought him into fundamental awakening. So here we go. Then the Lord of Death, this is what's going to happen. Ah, fantastic imagery. Then the Lord of Death, Yama, will tie a rope around your neck and drag you away. He will cut off your head, tear out your heart, pull out your entrails, lick up your brains, drink your blood, eat your flesh, and gnaw your bones. Whoa. Right. Yet you cannot die. So even though your body has been cut into pieces, you will recover. Shit, man. Being cut again and again causes extreme pain, so do not be afraid when the white pebbles are counted. Do not lie and do not fear the Lord of Death. Since you have a mental body, you cannot die, even if you are killed and chopped up. You are really the natural form of emptiness, so there's no need to fear. These lords of death, too, are the natural form of emptiness, your own confused self-display. You are an empty mental body of karmic imprints. Emptiness cannot harm emptiness. This is the third most repeated quote in the Book of the Dead. Number one, do not be distracted. Shamatha. Number two, recognition and liberation are simultaneous. Vipassana. Number three, emptiness cannot harm emptiness. That which has no characteristics cannot harm that which has no characteristics. The Lord of Death, the good head, the good and bad spirits, the bull-headed demon, and so on, have no external reality apart from your confused self-display. So recognize this. At this very moment, recognize everything as the bardo. Cool. And so this is what, actually, Sogyal Rinpoche says this. This is pretty good. The judgment scene will show you that what really counts in the final analysis is the motivation behind our every action. And there is no escaping the effects of our past actions, words, thoughts, and deeds, and the imprints and habits they have stamped us with. It means that we are entirely responsible, not only for this life, but for our future lives as well. Okay, let me see, I have another quote here. I have to see which ones are really worth reading. I think these are actually pretty awesome. Maybe not. Some of this is a little bit too esoteric. So, okay, now what begins about halfway through, you know, the first half is more about this life. The second half is now you're starting to morph. Depending on how long you're in there, halfway through, you're going to start entering the rebirth process. And so these following teachings are pretty cool because it's not just about the bardo's afterlife. It's at the end of a job, a relationship, anything. You will find these same principles apply to our urge to re-inhabit form. So like, for instance, when your spousal unit, your lover, inevitably dumps you, it's always going to happen, right? Maybe I should just speak about myself and my history. So sad. Can you hang out in that space, or are you going to just go running for another relationship, another body, another whatever? Can you actually hang out in that uneasy bardo space and make intelligent, informed decisions? Or are you going to impulsively? I mean, I've noticed this, you know, a lot of people who get divorced or someone dies. Not always, especially later. Yeah, the body isn't even cold in there in the Rolodex calling the next. I mean, really, right? 3 months later, they're engaged. Have you noticed this? Really? So have the courage to hang out in the space, make the right decisions. Fundamentally, the essence here is, again, impulse control, restraint, avoiding rebirth in any spontaneous realm that appears just because you want to feel comfortable, grounded, solid. And that's what gets harder and harder as you go through the bardos. Because the winds pick up, it gets more unsettled, more kind of tumultuous, and therefore the propensity to make bad decisions, to grab onto form, becomes increasingly likely. And so you want to avoid bad moves and strive for good moves. And as we'll see, you know, the best thing we can do. And again, oh my gosh, there's so much to say here. Like we mentioned earlier, Namo Amida Butsu, Om Amida Hri, make aspirations for rebirth into a pure land. But here's where it becomes very interesting, because yes, you can think of Amitabha, yes, you can recite his mantra, for sure, I'm not dissing that. But really what's more important is taking rebirth in the pure land of the present moment. That's what's more important. Because the pure land, even though yes, they're as real or unreal as this dimension, they are also archetypal, metaphoric. Tantra pure land, there's two types of pure land, sutra and tantra. Sutra is the literal heavens, the literal realms. Tantra pure land is the pure land is right here, right now. You just have to recognize it. And you'll see how this applies to the bardos. Okay, so specifically about halfway through, roughly 3.5 weeks, the connection to the past life fades, the mental body starts to morph into the next life. And here's where it gets interesting. The lights of the six realms start to appear. So those particular lights, each one of these realms, which again can be subdivided into 27 or 33 realms, each one originally has its basis, as we talked about yesterday or the day before, is light. And so what happens now is the six generative seed syllable light sources start to appear, soft and alluring. The bright lights, you've passed the bright lights in the luminous Bardo Dharmata. Now the soft lights occur. And they're called soft because they're seductive. They're our old habits, our old patterns. Much easier to take rebirth in pre-existing patterns, right? Than to break out of that mold. There's that form. Break out of that mold, that form, that body. Break out of that mold. Habits create form. Habits are a way to bring about form. So when we talk about habit forming, that's actually a tautology. It's redundant. Habits, in fact, even the Upanishads say this, habits are that which instill the sense of form. And so this is why we just love our habits, because they create what? A sense of stability, repetition, constancy. So they are behavioral forms. See? So when you work with habit control, you're actually working with birth control and your lust for form at the level of behavior. And this is where the power of habit becomes big time, right? Big time. It's so easy to capitulate and just give in. But the invitation here is don't go towards any of them. Don't leave the center of the mandala. Hold. Stay. Stay. Develop this witness awareness quality where you can watch this incredible display without being seduced into it. And so it gets wildly technical here. Each one of the realms associated with a color. So again, I'm just going to tell you for the sake of honoring the tradition. White light is the light of the jealous gods. Oh, I'm sorry, not the jealous gods, the real gods, sorry, my bad. White light, if you see white light, you're going to be reborn as a god, if you're seduced into that. Red light, jealous gods. Blue light, the human realm. People often tell me they see these blue lights, these purple lights. That's the light of this realm, interestingly enough. That's what they say. Green light, animal realm. Yellow light, a hungry ghost realm. Smoky light, the hell realms. In the lower the realm, the more comforting and seductive the light. And so again, we capitulate to these soft lights all the time. So whenever you capitulate to anger, that's the smoky light that then takes you into the realm of hell. Whenever you capitulate to the yellow light, hungry ghost, grasping, I definitely can't get enough. You're taking rebirth in that realm. Whenever you capitulate to animal realm mentality, habituation, what do they even say? The colloquialisms are interesting. Dogged determination, pig-headed, stubborn as a mule. Whenever you fall into those patterns, that you're capitulating to rebirth in the animal realm. And so as they say in the Pali Canon, mind leads all things. Psychology leads to ontology. In other words, what you inhabit now, what you reincarnate in now, as your principal behavioral default, is what you're going to reincarnate in after you die. So you're basically paving your way into heaven or hell right now, depending on the reincarnation states that you take on now. So if you're pissed off all the time, that's your default, you're paving your way for a rebirth in hell. Why? What is found now is found then. You're living in a hell realm now. And so therefore, it's beyond our scope, but to study Buddha psychology of the six realms is super interesting. To understand how it is that we're constantly going through this cycle of reincarnation every time we cascade through passion, aggression, ignorance, jealousy, pride. We're reincarnating through all those realms. Francesca, the paths leading to the six realms are perceived as softer lights because it is always easier to revert to habitual patterns of behavior than to open into entirely new ways of being. It's not easy to open when everything's falling apart. Usually our default is regressive, to contract. So it takes practice. When things are falling apart, do we generally open to that? No. We generally contract. And so this goes against the grain of our usual tendencies. The colored lights represent these mental states that eventually create the realms. Ontology comes from psychology. And because of the force of habit, we're going to be thrown into one of these realms. So now it gets a little bit, again, I'm just going to say a couple more things about what the literature says, just to pay homage to the literature. And then maybe we can so-called decode it or interpret it. So within the colored lights that appear in this state, features of the landscape that you are going to be reborn in start to appear. But what happens again more and more is the farther we go into it, we get more and more desperate. Remember, it's like being in a city, not safe neighborhood, getting dark. Every hotel room is full. You're running out of gas. That is not a good feeling. That's what it's going to feel like. More and more refuge to check in somewhere, right? Time to check in, right? And eventually, okay, I'll take that flea bag of a hotel, right? If the Ritz isn't open, you know, I'll take that Motel 6 flea bag for $29 a night. So here's what you want to do. You want to avoid, basically work with being attracted to any one of these realms. And this is where meditation comes in, totally. Avoid getting hooked. Avoid getting sucked in, going non-lucid to any state, thought, emotion, whatever. Meditation, profoundly important here. You watch all the stuff arise in meditation. You're developing a witnessing awareness, watching. And so you want to develop kind of witnessing lucid death experience, just like a witnessing lucid dream. You just watch dispassionately. In other words, you're not grasping, you're watching. That's not easy because we're so, you know, habituated to grasping after things. And so in life, really, whenever you feel the urge to give in to a developing emotion, based on what? Your inability to stay with openness, right? So you will, like I mentioned earlier, ooh, this is so worth repeating. You will reincarnate moment to moment and life to life into a dimension of experience or dimension of mind, the degree of openness that you can tolerate. And so here's a really interesting contemplation. The next time you feel yourself contracting into form, anger, passion, aggression, pride, jealousy, with your new sensitivity for contraction, you can pause, Bardo Yoga, and ask yourself, what more open state am I refusing to participate in now, right? What more open situation am I refusing now? This is a very powerful contemplation. Why can't I be more open? Why do I have to contract into that anger? Why do I have to contract into offensive defensive strategies or jealousy or pride? You don't have to. And so now when you feel yourself going there, that's called leaving the center of the mandala. You're leaving the center of the mandala, nowness. You're being hooked by the energy. You're being seduced into form. And you can feel this like, you know, it's very interesting. You're starting to talk to somebody, a spousal unit, a partner, a boss, and the conversation is not going in the way you want it to go. You find yourself, you're trying to be there, right? You're trying to be there, You're trying to be there, holding, and finally you just lose it in an outburst, right? Or whatever, right? You're trying to be with them. You know, you're hearing all this stuff, you just don't want to hear it. And you're going, yes, yes, yes. And then you've just lost it, right? You've completely gone non-lucid. You just explode. You've taken rebirth in hell. And so now with that practice, really, I can't tell you how many times this has helped me. I feel like I'm about to really get pissed off. Now, that doesn't mean that there are times when getting really angry, and anger is not the best thing. Anger is not anti-spiritual. Thich Nhat Hanh says there are some teachers that say things that it's like, really? You know, people say like, we tend to think that we're sitting with our anger or other emotional upheaval when we're often just sitting on it. There is a place for anger. There is a place for tough love. It's called the karma of destruction. So karma, anger purified, absolutely in order. But this is dirty anger. This is self-referential anger. This is anger usually based on me. Look what you're doing to me. Look what's happening to me. Look how you treated me. Instead of being a little bit sensitive, yes, you touch into that and you go, yeah, you know, there may be some truth to that. But what about them? Why are they acting that way towards me? And so then with that, geez, then you can listen to someone different. And I do this as a practice. I am not kidding. I do this as a practice. I am a liberal Democrat. And as a practice, I will listen to Sean Hannity. I will listen to Tucker Carlson. I will listen to people that drive me really, it's not easy. I do it as a practice, as a way to feel my contraction. Because if I can't feel that and communicate with this other person, how are we ever going to solve the culture wars and all this divisiveness and all this hatred? And so whether you're Republican, liberal, you know, conservatives could listen to Rachel Maddow, I'm sure, drive them batshit crazy. And so really, it's a very interesting, I turn it on, I have to prepare myself, I turn it on, and I'm hearing all this stuff. I do not want to hear this. This is not in line with my worldview. I feel the contraction. I feel like sometimes I want to throw my shoe at the window or at the TV. And then I go, wait a second. If I can't even hear what this person is saying with empathy, with tolerance, how am I ever going to communicate with them?
Huh? I just don't see how it's a good use of time.
I'll leave that up to you.
Okay.
Leave it up to you.
No.
Yeah, leave it up to you. I'm not saying you do it. I'm saying that's what I do.
Yeah.
So the idea here is to feel the developing emotion and not give in to it. So then eventually what happens is the light of the realm that you are eventually going to be reborn in will shine the most. And then what they say is slowly your body will actually take on the color of that realm. And so this is really complex, and I thought about this. Oh, I can go through all the lists and all the appearances and all the colors. But then I thought, let's just keep it super simple, because if I go through all the other six realms, and it's like tell you what to avoid, it's a little bit like saying don't think of a pink elephant, right? It's like, so instead of going through all those, I'm just going to tell you the best one. Outside of the Pure Land, the next best thing is human rebirth. Why? Why is it better than a God realm? Because it's the middle, not too tight, not too loose. The God realms are too loose, too relaxed, too blissful. The lower realms are too tight, too painful, too survival mode. And so the human realm is considered more porous, intermediate in the middle, where there are more auspicious coincidences and likelihoods because it's more porous. It's not as solid. All the other realms are really solid. The human realm, and look at your own experience, is just a collage of like, okay, I'm angry here, I'm passionate there. You know, we're all over the bloody place. And that porosity, that kind of inarticulate display, actually allows there's more bardos here, more opportunities for space. The other realms are so solid that they're harder. So the human realm is considered the best. And so this is what they say. Again, I'm just reading the literature here. You will see luxurious houses. And they say that you should enter these houses, you know, and this is blue light. Out of the blue light, these houses will appear. You should enter them and you will find then your future parents. You will find them doing the deed. You'll find them in intercourse. The color of the body, wait a second here, hold a second. Oh yeah, yeah, geez, do we need to go all through this? I feel like I should at least tell you what the literature says. So you'll also see lake with male and female swans. You'll feel like you're entering a city in entering a mist, or a city shrouded in mist with these nice houses, right? And then honestly, I'm having a little bit of a hard time sharing all this because, like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do with that? And so I'm going to refer you to the literature, because the literature, if you're interested in this sort of thing, is full of this type of stuff. And I'm not discounting it at all, but it doesn't really speak a ton to me. And so I thought it would be a little bit better to talk about, again, how to relate to these experiences instead of going through all the subtle nuances of, you know, colors of bodies and houses and swans and mists. Like, that doesn't really speak to me. That's not, I don't remember that kind of stuff. So my default, my bias. The fundamental thing is the following. You're going to feel disoriented, vulnerable, panic-stricken, desperately seeking refuge, still being pursued through darkness, whirlwind, snow, and hail. By what? Your karma. You're running away from yourself. There's no snow in there. There's no hail. There's no pus. There's no... That's just, again, metaphoric dream interpretation of these negative impulses that are buried. Why are they mostly negative? Because they're the repressed elements of your experience. That's what's coming out of the refuse heap, right? All the stuff you refused, stored in the refuse heap of your unconscious mind, that's what's coming up. And that's why most of this stuff is unwanted. That's why you try to get away from it. Why? Because you've spent your entire life trying to get away from it, right? And now it's coming after you. It's not coming after you. It's just your unconscious mind being made manifest. Why, again, Robert Thurman, genius, said it's not safe to die as long as you have an unconscious mind. So that's what's coming after you. Okay, this is... can't remember where this quote comes from. All the time we are being pursued by the illusory manifestations of karma. The demons, murderers, avengers, savage beasts, darkness, hurricanes, storms, snow, and hail. The whole atmosphere is terrifying. So if we see a grove of trees, we quickly hide among them, or if there is a house, we rush inside. We may even creep down a hole in the ground or curl up inside the cup of a flower. Then we become attached to our hiding place and are too frightened to come out, and so we end up taking a body in that realm. I think that's actually from the Book of the Dead. And then this is Trungpa Rinpoche. This is real. This is good. What is going on at this point is that through the force of very powerful karma, habit, you are being impelled or propelled into a state of such agitation that you will be extremely tempted to take rebirth in the first place of rebirth you perceive. And if you just go along with the flow or impulse of your habit, karma, you are apt to take birth mistakenly in extremely unfortunate circumstances. But if you can hold back, hold, with mindfulness and alertness and be careful, then you can choose. You can choose a fortunate rebirth. At this point, you have become extremely agitated. And if you give in to the agitation and panic, then you will have no control whatsoever over your subsequent birth. Therefore, you need to be very careful here. Okay? Make sense? How are we doing? We good for 5 more minutes? My watch is alive today. One of the things you can do here, and I used to do this way back when I started doing weekends on this stuff. I don't do it anymore, but we could if you want to. My teacher, Kenpo Rinpoche, used to suggest these things. One is to actually deliberately bring about really kind of unsettling, unwanted experiences. And one of the things I used to do, but it didn't go over all that great because it was a bit too unwanted, is we'd watch these god-awful horror movies. Right, exactly. Yeah, they're stupid, they're violent, they're disgusting, But what they do is a lot of doo-doo. They bring up a lot of unwanted, like, ugh, right? Like, I used to watch, I actually bought the damn thing. You know, the Saw series. Anybody? Matt, you look like kind of a Saw guy. just kidding, bud.
I can be.
Yeah. I mean, these movies are bad. I mean, they are just vile, they're ugly, they're violent, they're stupid. And I was watching these things. My Kimberovich just said it's like a charnel ground meditation. He said this is a good thing to do. And so I tried it. I couldn't get through these damn things without hitting the pause button. Because they're just so bad. And so as contrived and just like almost stupid as it is, it did allow me to work with really nasty states of mind. So the other thing he says you can do that's helpful is watch really kind of passionate, sexy films. Things that arouse a lot of passion. And then also, whether it's that or the other one, relate to whatever the display is with equanimity, with dispassionate, interested. It's like Nisargadatta Maharaj says, I love this guy. He's the guy that wrote the book, I Am That. It is disinterestedness that liberates. It is disinterestedness that liberates. So eventually, you're going to see your parents doing the deed. And interestingly enough, they say it's going to be your impulse to kind of get in on the act that's going to propel you towards rebirth. So there's going to be a combination of passion and then aggression, both based on ignorance. You're going to be attracted towards your mother or your father. If you're going to be attracted towards the mother in this scene and have aggression towards the father, those two main passions born of ignorance, then they say you will be reborn as a male. If you feel attraction towards your father and aversion towards your mother, you're going to be reborn as a female. Freudian Oedipus complex at its root. It's like, really? And so they say your consciousness will then enter between them, between what are called the red and white essences. You'll feel a temporary moment of bliss, then you lose out, you black out, basically. And that's basically, it's very interesting because the three roots of the wheel of life are what at play here. Passion towards one, aggression towards the other, both driven by ignorance. So the three roots are coming into play here. It's going to be the very last thing on your mind when you jump into the act. Then you're going to pass out. End of the bardo becoming, beginning of the bardo of life, gestation in the mother's womb, a womb with no view. We want to create a womb with a view. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
It's not just a room with a view, it's a womb with a view. So we want to create a womb with the right view. So bad. And so it's very interesting. What we leave off with is what then is going to drive us forward. Because those are the three pistons of samsara, passion, aggression, ignorance. So that's the very last thing that's going to drive us into form, and then it's actually going to literally form us in the mother's womb. And so that actually then transitions us into the bardo of life, which is beyond our scope for now. But what we're going to do when we come back, this is perfect timing. In the afternoon session, we're going to talk very specifically, like bullet point, because we're starting to end our event. Very specific what to do now. Again, I'm just going to paraphrase a lot of what we've already done, introduce a few things. What to do now to prepare for all this. And then, what to do then. So if you become lucid, you wake up, what do you do? And then if we have time, what I did is I went through the entire, again, I've read every translation of the Book of the Dead. What I did that may be of some benefit, I went through the entire book, the Fremantle Trungpa translation, and I excerpted every single bullet point instruction in that book. Which it's dense, but it'll save you a ton of time. And so I can read through that in 10 or 15, 10 minutes max. And so that way you'll have, like, you know, just a ton of guidance in written form that you will see. We basically pretty much talked about most, if not all, of this. And so now what I want to do is ping, bullet point, ping, bullet point, ping, bullet point, line by line by line. Sound like a plan?
Can you give us a copy of it?
Only if you say please.
Please.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'll have to, I can, yes, I can. I have to, it's not on my computer here.
I could scan it if you have a hard copy.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
It won't be great quality because it's my phone scanner.
Oh, it's your phone scanner. Okay, yeah, but it's better than nothing. Sure, I can do that for you guys. We can, for all you people, and where are you? Are you hearing anything, any word?
Nothing lately.
Oh, man.
They have a scan at the registration center.
Oh, I'm sure they do, yeah. Yeah, gosh, I hope we get back online. Okay, perfect timing, time to end. Silence is over. We're back here at 3:00. And we're going to do, again, the meditation session. I'll be here the whole afternoon. The meditation session will be a little bit more what we did yesterday, that first hour and a half, where I'm going to give a few comments, and then we're going to be out there. We're going to let nature teach us. Again, we want to mix. You know, we don't, this place is great, the seats are great, the room is great, but we want to extend. And so I'll give a few more extra instructions, maybe remind me about looking up into the sky, mixing mind with space, using the elements to teach us. So bring a hat. We'll spend more time outside. We're not going to come back and forth. I'm going to give some comments, and then you'll be out there for an hour or so. Find a tree, sit under. That's what I did yesterday when I wasn't here, to recharge. You know, go out for a walk, wherever, aimless wandering, find a place to sit, or whatever. And then engage in some of these contemplations and some of the practices. Like, again, as a way to mix, stretch, expand. See you back here at 3:00. No, we're free. You can sing and dance.